Welcome to Bouncing Back Stronger, the podcast where we explore the incredible power of you. Resilience, personal growth, and triumph over adversity. I'm your host, Sarah Jane Vasquez, and I'm thrilled to have you here. Each week, we'll delve into inspiring personal stories, we'll share practical strategies for growth, and provide valuable insights from my own expert experience and as a trained therapist, hypnotherapist, and mindset coach. Get ready to be inspired, motivated, and equipped with the tools to bounce back stronger than ever before. And if you enjoy the show, please press follow. We'd really appreciate your help and your support here at Bouncing Back Stronger. Now, let's get started. So, welcome to Lauren, and your surname, Lauren, a little bit difficult to pronounce, I'm sorry, like mine.
Yeah, it's Dionysius. So Dionysius. It's Greek, apparently, so yeah.
Lovely, thank you. And you're speaking to us from the Gold Coast, Lauren. Now, this is a topic that I know that many listeners will not be familiar with, and you've joined us today as you are a baby soul communicator. And I admit, I'd never heard of a baby soul till I spoke with yourself, but it's really fascinating. Before we perhaps explore that, Lauren, we had our first intro talk and you'd had a birthday the day before, and I asked you, oh, Lauren, you know, lovely to meet you and, you know, happy birthday, fiesta, what did you do? And you told me, Lauren, and this is fascinating to me, that you went and had a magnesium float tank. And I said, what on earth is that, Lauren? So I'm going to start off with that because some people out there may know what it is, but I didn't.
Yeah. So it's known as float therapy, I guess. But what it is it's these giant tanks. Some of them have like a lid on it. Some of them are more just like an open pool, like an oversized bathtub. And they're filled with, you know, 400 or 500 kilograms of magnesium. And so when you climb into the water, and it's only, it wouldn't be up to your knee, so they're not very deep. But when you get in, you float. You can't, you know, it's hard even to sit up because there's so much salt in the water, magnesium in the water. So yeah, and they're also a sensory deprivation tank. So what you can do is it's, you know, there's no sound unless you can play music if you want to, but normally there's no sound. It's pitch black inside. And the purpose of it is to induce relaxation and lower the cortisol levels. It's also really good for your muscles and your joints. And my understanding is that it gets your brain into that theta like wave state, which is that, you know, deep rest and relaxation. And it's just very, you float for an hour normally. And you just float and your brain relaxes, your body relaxes. It's very good for a lot of athletes use it for, you know, after like training recovery. For the muscles, but I use it for relaxation, just because it soothes my nervous system, calms my brain, stops those thoughts that go round and round, and often I'll have a nap.
Is it warm in that tank, in that room?
It's about 35 degrees Celsius. All the ones I go to are, I think you can get them a bit warmer or cooler than that. So it's about just slightly cooler than you know, your core body temperature, but it's about the temperature of your skin. And there's also an overhead heater that kind of hangs from the roof as well to cool the parts of your body that are out of the water, like the front part of your body. I swear by them. They're so
it does sound amazing. Of course there's a lot of I think, you know, talk about how good cold water therapy is for you, and, you know, perhaps, you know, sitting in cold water for however long you can, or maybe even cold showers, because again, for the same reasons, reducing your cortisol levels and helping you to de-stress and things like that. But I'd never heard of the magnesium. I just think that's a wonderful idea, especially that idea of floating, because the weight, you know, there's no weight, you're kind of weightless, aren't you? So I think that probably has a psychological effect on your own, you know, your own mind.
Absolutely. And it's meant to kind of, I guess, recreate that sense of being in the womb. So it's that sense of safety and floating and feeling contained. And yeah, it's a
What's on
really,
in
really beautiful experience.
what's on in the background? Is there like a white noise that perhaps we hear in the womb, or is there any low music, or is it completely silent?
You can choose. So they have speakers in there, and you can normally what I do is I ask them just to play, 5 minutes at the end and well, 5 minutes at the beginning, 5 minutes at the end, just to kind of help me land there and help me settle, and then to wake me up on the other end if I've fallen asleep. Or you can just have it silent all the way through, or you can if you want to. For some people, if they, it can be quite confronting, I think, to some people at times. So if they haven't done it before, or they're not used to, if they're claustrophobic or don't like the dark or something like that. So you can have music playing all the way through. You can also keep the light on if you want to. There's no rules really, but yeah, I just find like quiet, dark. Silent is, yeah, that's my happy
Is it
place.
something you build up to? Because I can imagine, I'm talking probably about me, an hour would seem like a very long time. You know, I think, how will I relax or not do anything for an hour?
Yeah, and I think that's it. It's almost like the more that you struggle to sit still, like the more you need that
You need
downtime
to
and
do
that
it.
relaxation.
Similar to
But yeah.
meditation in a way, you know, meditation
Yeah.
is very good for you, and it's scientifically proven that it's very good for you. But some of us are really put off when we think, you mean I need to sit there for half an hour, you know, and not, and no, we don't. So we can build up to that. You can, you know, it's about that
Yeah.
quiet time, isn't it? It's about that switching off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you
And
can look,
reducing
the
those.
pools are big enough that you can, sort of kick off from the bottom and, put your arms up to above your head and like, hit the top and then sort of ping pong up and down if you do need like a bit of movement. Do that sometimes. So it's not like you have to just stay stock still and not move. And you can always get out earlier if you want to. So it's
Not
not
prescriptive.
that restricting, but I guess it gives you that opportunity for really deep relaxation. Also, it's amazing for creativity. I've had some of my best ideas in business in the float tank. So that's another purpose for it as well, is
And they
like
say that, don't they?
creativity.
Just take some quiet time. And
Yeah.
you know, your ideas are most probably going to come to you then, rather than your mind being
Yes.
overloaded. Now, you did mention something there about kind of that idea of feeling in the womb, or going back to, you know, when we were babies. And that leads quite nicely into what you do, which is a baby soul communicator. So I guess my first question to you is, what is it? What do you do?
Yeah, for sure. So it's about connecting to the soul of a baby. So I believe that we're all souls, we're all infinite energy. We all come and go from Earth at various times for various reasons. And so through baby soul communication, what we can do is tap into the souls of babies, whether it's preconception, whether they're still in spirit, whether it's they've come to the earth briefly and then left through miscarriage, stillbirth, any type of loss. Also through pregnancy, they communicate, as well as during birth and well into childhood. I find the kids these days, it's quite easy to still connect with their soul up until about, depends on the child, but maybe 10 to 12 years of age. Things go a bit fuzzy during the teenage years, but yeah, so what we can do then is tap into when we can tune into their soul and gain some insight and some wisdom from their side of the fence. It's like what's their journey, what's their plans, why are they coming, why aren't they coming, what can we do to support them to come here, and once they're already here as well. So it's really just about, you know, let's, you know, babies are the ones that come and go. So let's find out from them, from the horse's mouth, why they're doing what they're doing, you know, because I think sometimes we get very tunnel visioned on our own journey, which is, you know, that's, if that's what we know, that's all we can go by. But when we can have another perspective or have a different insight, then it can shed light onto our own journey. And that I find just gives women so much, like a sense of peace, comfort. If they're feeling guilty or feeling like they've done something wrong, it can provide a lot of relief and just letting go of that guilt when they realize that, oh, well, I didn't do anything wrong. This was like my baby's choice. And I guess, you know, the whole, I guess in summary, it's all about recognizing the autonomy of each soul. And we all are. We all have made that decision to come to the earth. And when we can recognize that also for the next generation and those babies who are coming, then it can, they can share some really powerful insights and guidance because they're sharing their story. So that's how I see myself, I guess. I see myself as a messenger or a bridge between worlds to help share those messages and that wisdom that these babies want to share and communicate with us.
So is it that you have an intuition, or, you know, that you feel that you are spiritually connected to the babies in some way? How did you find this out? How did you come to see this?
Very reluctantly, to be honest. I never considered myself a spiritual person. I didn't believe in psychics or anything like that until only a few years ago, really. But what happened is because I was working as a registered nurse in neonatal intensive care, so I was working with the sickest babies and those that have had the toughest start to life. And so I didn't, it was almost like, I don't know if the babies is like they, not that they chose me, but it was like they became my teachers in the way that I just started, not asking for it, but I just started seeing pictures around the babies I was caring for clinically. And, you know, sometimes I would, you know, see things moving out the corner of my eye, or I would feel, I'd touch a baby to, you know, change their nappy or to give them a bath, and I would get different sensations in my own body that would give insight into what was going on with them. Like I might get, you know, a lot of pain in my stomach if they were struggling with their digestion, or lots of things like that. So it became a bit of a jigsaw puzzle where I had to figure out, one, am I going crazy and do I need time off work? That's why I initially thought. And so I took I was probably about 2 weeks off work because I'm like, too many night shifts, not enough sleep was my initial
thought. Is that because you were becoming overloaded with these kind of sensations that you were feeling?
Yeah, or just that, again, being a registered nurse and being very left-brained and about the facts and the evidence and the research, it's like, well, what are these pictures about? Because that doesn't make any sense to me. And because I was kind of like, I mean, I guess I was dabbling a little bit in meditation and yoga and that at that point. So I guess my senses were coming online a little bit more. It certainly wasn't until it sort of collided in the hospital where I realized, like, initially it was like, no, this isn't right. Like, this isn't supposed to happen. This is, you know, I'm a nurse, right? Like I look at it's black and white and it's the facts and it's what's real, what I can see in front of me. So it was a real, I guess, adjustment for me. And I sort of, I ignored it for a little bit when it didn't go away. I just thought, well, next best thing is I'll just ignore it and pretend that I'm not seeing, feeling or hearing anything. And I probably ignored it for a year because it was weird, right? Like, who does that? And then, you know, I'm trying to
And
be
did you
like
tell anyone? Did you tell anyone at the time? Look, this is what I'm...
No.
No. Yeah. And why was that? Maybe possibly afraid of judgment.
Yeah, for sure. Especially by, you know, colleagues who are also in the same field as me and also had that left-brained, you know, clinical, technical facts mentality. And so, yeah, I didn't say anything for probably... was probably even a couple of years before I even mentioned it to friends as well. So just because, yeah, I was so fearful of the judgment. And I think too, I was my own biggest skeptic as well. So I felt like it's almost like I had to test myself or test these experiences and sort of feel into them. And once I realized that they weren't going away, and it's like, okay, well, maybe I should start listening and taking a bit more notice of this. Yeah, that's when I started to, I guess, understand things differently. And
So
it then it completely.
what kind of things were you listening to?
Well, I was just here, and it sounds crazy because I've done some psych nursing as well, so I know about, hallucinations and like hearing voices, and but that's what it was like to me. Like I was, it wasn't quite a conversation like we're having now, but just when I was quiet and I was caring for a baby, it's like there'd be this voice in my ear talking to me, and it wasn't me. It wasn't my own internal dialogue. It didn't sound like me. I didn't know what was going to come next. I didn't know what they were going to say, and so it was just me. Like I just had to listen, I guess. And I thought, well, is this information, or one, is it helpful? Is it useful? Does it seem, yeah, is it like, where's it coming from? Like, who is it? Like, who's communicating? And then
What were
that's,
they
and then
saying
in,
to you?
there was a lot of different things depending on the baby, but a lot of it, interestingly, now that I've just shared around fear of judgment, was around judging them or like labeling them. But also, the one that comes to mind straight away is around judgment towards families, because I'd work with a lot of really, really challenging social situations where it would be easy to judge the parents for the choices and their behaviors, especially when it came to drug use during pregnancy and babies being born addicted to drugs. And it was very easy to go into judgment around the mothers in particular. And so a lot of some of my earliest and most profound wisdom that I still remember today is the voices that would come through. And it's like, your judgment of my mother only shows your own intolerance of differences in society. And it was these really like quite profound wisdom where that really kind
Like
of
a conscience.
yeah, and like the, I guess maybe like an ethical side of it, but also a real putting me in my place, not in a nasty way, but just it was quite direct and blunt. And that's another feature of baby soul communication, is it doesn't tippy toe around the edges. It goes straight to the point and can be very blunt and confronting.
And we all say that children are 100% honest anyway, don't we? You know, whatever
Oh,
a child says usually, you know, is honest. You know, I don't like that, mummy, you know.
exactly. They haven't learned those filters yet to kind of soften things for the other person. So it was like that. And as I began to ask, like,
Well, I was just
sorry, I was.
at that time, was that Well, at that time, then, did you begin to perhaps see the parents in a different light and maybe reflect on your own behavior and think, yeah, how am I treating this person? I have actually made a judgment, perhaps even in your
Yes.
subconscious, but it was there.
Absolutely. And it really made me self-reflect a lot and really look at what I was thinking, and even if I wasn't saying it. And then what began to happen is, the team leaders would actually start putting me on purpose with these really difficult families that were known to be causing difficulties with other staff, because they're like, Lauren, you just know how to talk to them, you know how to, you don't, not that I don't rock the boat, but you just know how to interact with them and communicate with them, and you don't, make the situation worse and all of that. And, I don't think I had any other, this like experience or anything around that would set me apart other than hearing or like, or understanding this other side. And I still believe that that really did change, especially in the last couple of years that I was nursing. It really did change how I interacted with with parents, siblings, and also the baby itself as well, and also being aware of my own energy and my own thoughts around the babies I was caring for as well. That really had a big impact on on how I cared for them in that way, but from my own space or my own energy, because I realized very quickly that baby, as you know, babies are like sponges. They soak up everything, and they if we are if our energy is saying one thing but we're saying another, they pick up on that conflict very easily. You know, we all do. It's just how much of it we're aware of. So I learned that if I just sort of shared with these babies, look, sorry, it's 3 a.m. in the morning. I'm exhausted. I'm tired. I just want to go to bed. But sorry, you're stuck with me for the night. I found if I, and I would just think that in my mind, I wouldn't talk it out loud, but I would just say that to them. And then their response to that is their energy wouldn't change. That's what I realized. And I noticed this because I was very, with my own experiences, I compared them to the heart monitors. So all babies in intensive care are connected to heart rate, breathing rate, oxygen levels. And so as I was communicating with these babies and also caring for them and touching them in different ways, I would always correlate their cardiac monitor with what I was doing, just to help, again, that part of me that wanted the evidence. And I learned that if I said, look, I'm feeling great, and I just tried to carry on as normal, like I would notice not only changes in that baby's energy really subtly, but I could also notice, like, after a while, like different changes on their heart monitor as well. And I found that they were a lot more, not stable, but a lot more receptive to me if I was just honest with how I felt. They didn't take it on board. Whereas if I wasn't honest and I tried to be all happy at 2 a.m., then they were like, what's going on here? Like something doesn't feel right, something feels off. And then as adults, we know this pattern where we start to question ourselves and like, did I do something to annoy them, or why are they kind of presenting like this when, we're often picking up on a conflict somewhere, like energetically. So
Okay, so how so a couple of things there really. So with those babies and hoping that the majority of them left the hospital well enough, well, did they, did they, did you feel like you had an affinity with the babies that you cared for? Was there a bond there then?
It was, I guess, especially for the first few, because it was a it was a new experience for me, and I feel like they were teaching me so much. But I think after a while it just became so normal to me that it was happening with every baby I was caring for, and there'd be
But you
some times
see,
where I was like, I have to like turn that off, too much
yeah,
now.
because actually, I was going to say, if this is all going on for you and you're looking after these babies, which is a major role for you anyway, it's a, it's a commendable role. But it must have been so emotionally draining.
Look, the job itself, being in neonatal ICU, is
It's a
very,
draining
even
job
without
anyway.
this side, it's very emotionally draining. But I guess even though it felt like I had a foot in each world, and I was sort of juggling that, because obviously my first priority was the safe clinical care of the baby I was caring for. That always come first. And look, there were times where I had to turn that off and say, look, I can't, not, turn off the spiritual side, I mean, not the clinical side, but turn off the spiritual side and say, hey, I can't talk now. Or, if things were really busy, or, I had a lot of different experiences during resuscitation and that sort of thing. So emotionally it was challenging, but I have to say that learning to communicate with babies in this way actually made it a lot easier to care for them, and I was actually a lot less drained emotionally, especially when things went wrong or things weren't really pear-shaped with these babies or they deteriorated. And also, as I said, the different family situations that come up, the work actually helped it to be more actually easier for me in many ways, because I did have this different perspective that I could hold alongside the clinical and the practical. So but I initially the first 10 years of my career was very draining. to the point I left because I'm like, I can't deal with this anymore. It's not, you know, and I guess that's kind of where
So
my journey
did you leave the
started.
nursing for good then? Is that when the moment came and you thought something's got to change? When
Yeah.
did you decide that this was, you were going to not go back to nursing and you were going to pursue this as a venture? When did that moment
Yeah,
come?
well, it was like, I guess a few different things. Like I left, actually left nursing in 2011 because I couldn't bear to deal with babies, especially those that didn't survive.
So
And
poorly,
you know,
yeah.
I was very emotionally, mentally, physically drained. And it was tough. And I thought, I can't do this anymore. So I left and I packed my bags, went to Africa for a few months, and then come back like in 2012. And I stayed away from the babies for another 3 years. And then eventually I went back, and that's when it was about 2016, I went back to the nursery, and that's when things started to change. But then I went through another journey then from like 2016 through till 2021, where I felt like I was kind of learning. And, you know, but I guess what I got to this point where, as I mentioned earlier, I wasn't able to share what I was experiencing because I wasn't appropriate in my clinical role to share with colleagues or share with the families themselves. Like it was really, would have been really inappropriate for me to share this information. And so I've got to this point where it's like, it's all well and good for me to learn this, and it's really interesting, keeps my life interesting. But how can I use this to help people? And I realized that I couldn't use it to support families in the role that I was in as a nurse.
Because they're in conflict in a way, aren't they? As you said, sort of like ethically, you know.
Yeah, and stepping over my own professional boundaries and, you know, duty
but
of
for
care.
You knew probably it was something that you could not get rid of. It's not going to go away.
No.
Exactly.
That's
you tried
it.
to leave it, you went away for 3 years, you know, you came back, and it's still there.
Exactly. So I'm like, obviously it's here for a reason.
But,
and
you know,
it's
for
here
those
to...
for those mums and dads who perhaps the worst happens for these babies, or the mother miscarries, or, you know, stillbirth, you could actually bring them a lot of comfort if they, you know, wanted to listen to you. So I'm sure you had kind of a bit of conflict about that actually I'm doing something here that could be really beneficial to somebody.
Especially with the babies who didn't survive, you know, again, that's part of the ICU experience, and you know, not all babies go home. And it was, you know, but some of my most powerful communication experiences with babies were when they were leaving their bodies. And you know, and to be able to have been able to share what was happening with the families at the time or after, I think would have really been able to bring so much comfort to these families. But it
when they
wasn't.
were leaving the bodies, did you see anything, or was it literally, you know, how could you describe that for us? That was powerful to you. How could we imagine what you're going, what's happening?
So I've had I had three shared death experiences with babies where I witnessed the soul leaving the body and what happens. And probably the easiest one to explain, because they were all quite different in their own ways, but you know, what has been common in all three of them is that the soul left the body about 2 hours before the heart stopped beating. And then again, it's this thing of like, I see these images not through my human eyes, but through like, it's like this filter or this layer that comes over the top, and I can still see the room I'm in and still see what's around me and hear people talking, but it's like this layer comes over, and it's like a window into another world. And so what I saw in this particular one, this little preemie baby, and I saw her, what I felt initially is I felt an energy coming towards me, and then it's hard to describe what that feels like, but I guess the feeling like when someone's like watching you and you kind of get that feeling that there's someone around that you can't see. And then I had an image that come across this filter in front of me that was it was a whole lot of angels. I don't know what you call a group of angels, maybe like a swarm. I don't know, but there
I
were
don't know.
literally hundreds of them, hundreds of them. And they were, you know, playing, you know, like the French horn thing, like
were
the
they
gold.
were they were they exactly what we kind of imagine, bathed in light and, you know, all serene and golden?
Kind of, but they weren't really defined. So it was like this big wall of white, and I could see like the occasional wing, and I didn't see faces or anything like that. It was, again, it was more about this feeling that come over me. And then, yeah, all I saw was like all this white, but I could intuitively sense that it was like lots of different beings. And as I said, I could hear. I had a church upbringing, so it was kind of like those some of those like choral like hymns, and you know, that real I don't know, it kind of, I see it as angelic music. It's quite you know, I've got like the organ and all that sort of that sort of church music, I guess.
And
And I was sort of
interesting,
hearing that.
yeah, sorry, like interesting though, where you said you had a church upbringing. Of course, you saw the angels, but this is very spiritual, isn't it? You know, so did you find any conflict between your religious upbringing to, you know, now what you were experiencing?
Yeah, like it's been, you know, it's been a journey, and I didn't just, you know, stop going to church one day and then have this happen the next. It was quite a break. But yeah, for the first 20 years of my life, I did have a very strict religious upbringing. And then I had a period of time, probably 10 to 15 years, where I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure about anything. I didn't feel a particular like magnetism or drawing to any type of being or, you know, God-like figure or anything like that. I sort of went into Buddhism for a bit, but I realized that was kind of replacing, you know, the God figure with like a Buddha figure. And I was just, yeah, I think there was just a lot of like personal growth and reflection more than anything. So yeah, so I had that space between the church and then the spiritual stuff occurring, because and I needed that space, because I wouldn't have been able to
process
they're
both of
so
them.
Different,
Yeah.
so different. It would have been impossible.
And and also process those around you. I'm thinking perhaps of friends and family, maybe, you know, that if you've been brought up within a church environment, a very religious environment, I'm assuming that your parents are of that ilk. So what you're doing now, or what perhaps back then you were saying that, you know, this is what you were going to do, I'm sure that their reaction was one of perhaps just like shock, like what?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I still haven't told my dad. My dad is still very, very much like in the church, right?
Yeah.
And he's very, and my stepmom as well. And they're,
yeah,
I respect their beliefs. I've got nothing against it. Like, it's, you know, each to their own, but it's just didn't, it's what felt true for me. My mum also, she, you know, she was also heavily involved in the church, but now in her later life, she's actually really curious about the spiritual side as well. And I do believe that my mum is very, very intuitive and very connected, but perhaps hadn't sort of spent a lot of time developing it. So she's really curious about the work I do. And whenever we talk, she's always, you know, like, what have the babies been saying? Or, you know, she's really intrigued by it. So that's also another interesting change as well with my mum, and how she is really embracing, I think, like the spiritual side of things.
Didn't you, Lauren, as well, didn't something really affect you? I think on one of your travels you were telling me in the when we first met about a near-death experience, you know, something that you experienced that had a real profound impact on you.
Yeah, it was when I took that break. Well, I thought at the time that I'd left nursing in 2011, and I went to Africa and did some volunteering, did some traveling. And Yeah, I had a whitewater rafting accident in the Zambezi River. And where I was underwater, I fell out of the raft. It was the end of the season, so the water was really low and the rocks were high in the water, and I fell out of the raft and was underwater. I don't know for how long, but I went through two or three rapids in the water, not able to breathe. And it wasn't a nice, lovely white pearly gates near-death experience like a lot of people have. It was very dark. It was kind of, I guess now I think of it, like being in a magnesium float tank. It was very dark, and I could hear the water in my ears. When you get water in your ears, and it was weird. It was like I'd split in two. There was me that was in the water that could feel all the rocks and all of that, and there was a me outside of myself that could see me in the water, and then I could see a screen. And it's very much how it's reported. It was this screen of I was seeing different parts of my life. I was seeing my family at different times. I was seeing friends. I was seeing places I'd
So like all of
lived.
these things flashing by, almost on like a TV screen, like a video
Yeah.
recording of what had gone before. We
Yeah.
have heard that
Yeah.
before, haven't we? They are stories that have gone before, but this happened to
Yeah.
you. And you felt it
Yeah.
and you
But
saw
it
it.
was. Yeah, and it was I didn't feel at peace at all. I felt very frightened because I didn't want to die. I knew I wasn't ready to die, so there was a lot of I guess resistance what was happening. But then I did hear a voice said that no, you have to go back for the children. And at the time I thought it was my niece because she was about 8 at the time. And I thought, oh, I need to go back and see Olivia grow up and be there for her. And
Not
that's what
those
I thought.
children, it turns out. Not no so well, of course, for Olivia,
No.
but not just specifically Olivia.
Yes. There was obviously a much bigger picture that I
How
didn't know
fascinating.
about then, but that I really do believe was a big pivotal turning point for me, because then I become really interested in the afterlife and like what happens when we die and why are we here, and some of those big questions that sort of sent me on a little spiritual journey, and then everything else kind of unfolded from there.
It's almost like there was your sign. This was meant to happen. You were meant to get this sign so that you will pursue this as a journey within a career, within helping others.
Absolutely,
Amazing.
absolutely.
You must have
Yeah.
felt, like after that when you come out, when you came around, like very maybe, did you feel quite, wow, what just happened? Calm?
I was actually really panicky because when they rescued me, so a canoe or a kayak come over to me, and I felt my body being lifted out of the water, and they must have put me on the front of the boat, paddled to the side, and then the guy said, just wait here, there's another raft coming down, we'll put you in that raft and then you can continue on. And I was like, no way on God's good earth am I going to get back into a raft after what I'd just experienced. Because I'd had this feeling before I even got in the raft. I'm like, I don't want to fall out, I don't want to fall out. It was like this fear of mine. I'd been rafting before and was fine, didn't fall out.
I'd be
And
like,
so
I
when it
just had a
was
near-death experience. Get me to that
yeah.
shore. No, thanks.
No. So I had a lot of I felt a lot of adrenaline and a lot of I don't want to say anger, but I was annoyed that nobody had rescued me earlier, because we were told that there were kayaks like at every rapid, but there weren't obviously. And yeah, so we had to walk out of the gorge then because it was in a big valley. So I had to hike up that, but I had plenty of adrenaline on board, so it was fine getting up the hill. But yeah, I was on like an adrenaline rush then for the rest of the day. I remember that just feeling really, so it's this sense of feeling really like having so much energy, but it was just like my body had gone into some sort of flight or fight, like survival mode, and it was just like this adrenaline rush. But it didn't feel good. It wasn't like a happy rush. Like it was like, oh my God, like I nearly died, but I still wasn't even really sure at the time what had happened. It took quite a while for me to realize, like, oh God, like I just had like a near-death experience. It was a while after the actual thing that I realized what was happening. So when I sort of pieced all the and started remembering the different, you know, the being in the water, being out of my body, seeing the screen, the voice, took me a while to put those pieces together to understand.
Yeah, there's an awful lot for you to process in that time, isn't there? You know, all of this is going on for you that, as you've said, you couldn't share with anybody. It was all kept in within yourself. So, you know, after that, you did go back to nursing, didn't you? And then you did decide, no, something's got to change. And I guess this is where you are today. You've been building your business.
So now I work, privately with mums at all stages of the journey, from preconception, you know, trying to conceive, pregnancy loss, pregnancy, preparing for birth, like also helping mums adjust with a newborn, like again, tuning into the baby's soul. And it's like, what do they need? How can mum help them to adjust to the earth now that they've been born? So just working with them to tune into their own baby's wisdom, and working with mums too to help develop that within themselves. Because I believe we can all do this. I just think that for me, I had more exposure to babies than most because I looked after them for 20 years. So I had a lot of access, I guess, to different babies and different types. So that's why I believe that I can do this. But I do believe that we all have that intuitive sense and we can tune in. We just need to work with it and develop it.
I think if we can take a holistic approach to it as well, you know, this certainly has a role to play. And I can imagine, and I'm probably talking about a little bit about myself here, because I've had miscarriages, I've had four miscarriages. And, you know, if I'd have perhaps known you or known somebody like you, I do think it could have given me some comfort. I do think in those times of sadness or emptiness, it could have, you know, just helped me along. And you mentioned before, but the idea that of guilt and blame, that, you know, what did I do? Did I do something? Was it something I ate? You know, was I, you know, not doing something right? And kind of those questions that we often ask ourselves in those situations, that we have no answers for, but can automatically go for the blame game. It was my fault. You know, so I can imagine that for that particular group of clients, and of course the clients as well who tragically, you know, have later miscarriages or, you know, stillbirths.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, and I'm a big believer in honoring both as well. It's not about, you know, living in the spirit world and trying to seeing things from their perspective at the, like, you know, while dismissing our own journey, because we're all human and we have very real, deep emotional grief experiences and loss experiences. And you know, it's really important that we honor that. And I guess how I see this work is it's like a cushion or like a softening that can come around that human experience just to provide, you know, a softer landing or a little bit more insight. But it's, you know, again, I guess it's sort of sums up my journey. It's like a foot in each world. You sort of take, you need to, well, I believe that we need to balance both. We need a bit of both. We need our to honor our human experience because it's real and it's what we're living through, and it's valid. All those emotions and that are so real and valid. But also it's like, you know, well, there's this other perspective that if we can dip our toes into that as well, we can find a lot of insight and comfort for our journey. But it doesn't, it's not to replace that journey that we're going through or to dismiss it in any way.
And I did read something about, you know, in reality, things that we think, our thoughts, they're never really facts. You know, they're never really concrete. They are very much perspectives. So also, even in our reality, even in our reality, it's all based on perspective. You know, there was this picture, you know, no, there's three blocks in the gap, saying no, there's four. And it was one of those, you know, kind of trick, you know, you could see three, you could see four, but it's all about perspective. And so if we kind of put them both together, you know, one person may have this perspective, but another person's got that one. And kind of then folds into grief, loss, fertility. No two journeys are ever the same. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because I'd imagine that with what you do, you also then can help the parent further, you know, or that person further in working on themselves. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yeah. If they're open to it, it depends, you know, some women are very, very much in that space where they're ready to use the work as a much deeper way of working for themselves or, you know, or their own healing journey. You know, some women are less open to that, and it's, you know, everyone's different and everyone has their own journeys and their own readiness for different experiences and receiving different types of information. So it's a very individual process and a very, you know, one that I think requires a lot of, you know, compassion and, you know, no judgment and just, yeah, really honoring these women and their journeys and just supporting them with how we can with where they're at, you know, and that's so different for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm intrigued when you said earlier about you also work with children, you know, and as much as up to 11 or 12. Just tell me a little bit about that. I mean, I have a 5-year-old, so I'm really intrigued as to what you, yeah, what they can talk now, you see, so there is language, you know, and they could communicate and they can tell us what they're thinking and what they want. So, how does this fit in, Lauren?
Yeah, it's something that was very unexpected because obviously my focus and experience has been with babies clinically, but it gradually just sort of expanded in both ends of the time continuum, sort of pre and then post. And I started having these women coming to me, or they'd be trying to conceive. And what would happen is during the reading or the communication is, you know, a sibling would pop in. And if I didn't know this mother, I'm like, you know, do you have a child? I can see like this 2-year-old. And it's like, well, I've got a 2-year-old son. And it's like, well, he's got something to say. And I'm like, I don't know what that is, or, you know, but but doing quite a few of those now, and you know, they're like, you know, I find it's the same with us as adults, right? We've got the language, we can articulate feeling, seeing, hearing, but there's also this higher part of ourselves,
constant chatter,
our soul, or our
sometimes
self.
What we're saying isn't necessarily what we're thinking, you know. Although we did say earlier that children don't really have the filter that we have as we're conditioned as we get older, you know. But maybe children can hold back a little about their true feelings. In fact, probably a lot, their true feelings and what they're really feeling, in perhaps because they don't want to upset a parent or a friend or something, you know. I think that's where a lot of our childhood trauma can also come from. Like that people pleasing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's where it starts. And I think, you know, I guess the way I see it is, you know, yes, we're here in our human body, but, you know, when we're looking at the soul's perspective, it's like our body is part of our soul. It's, you know, you could see, I guess I imagine like our body as being like a piece of the pie, and the whole pie is our soul. Mm. And, you know, our body is like, it's like we fit into that soul, or we're a piece of that, but our soul is much bigger than that. So it's the same with kids as well. It's like their bodies are like one piece of their soul's pie. And so when we can connect to the rest of the pie, then we can get a lot more information and insight on how we can support that body. And it's the same with us as well as adults. We, you know, we have, again, like I was mentioning, that higher self, or our soul, the part of us that remains in spirit, like whatever you want to, however people experience or believe, it doesn't really matter, but it's this like this higher part of ourselves that does have a bigger picture, or like a bird's eye view, more than what we do here in our human body. Mm. And that's where the wisdom is. That's where the insight and the perspective and
I think I'm more and more, even within business, you know, myself, like we can become so blinkered in a way, so driven on just the one thing, without considering the whole, and you know, you talk about stuff like the whole soul, but we need as adults as well, like children, for example, they need teachers, they need parents, they need that guidance. And as adults, we can just sometimes just be left on our own, you know, our own devices. So to see that whole, we need those people around us to help us to see that, you know, like coaches or
Definitely.
therapists or, you know, even a really good trusted friend or something like that. Someone's going to tell you straight, you know, a friend who'll just give it to you kind of thing.
Absolutely. And I think too, we can also learn to connect to that, that wise part of ourselves, or
Yeah, that
through like
wisdom.
meditation, journaling, automatic writing, all these sorts of things as well, are ways that we as adults can connect to. Yes, we do absolutely need those other humans around us for support, but we can also call on that spiritual support as
Of
well.
course, the journaling
To start.
definitely and meditation definitely, you know, I talk about those things a lot, but they do really work and they do really help for you to see that bigger picture, especially in our world today where it's crazy. You know, who's not on a hamster wheel? You know,
Exactly.
who would like to just go and sit in a cave for even a day, maybe an hour, you know, taking
Exactly.
that time out, taking that time away, that space. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Just one thing. You mentioned your niece Olivia. I'm sure she's a bit older now since you last spoke at you know, since you had your accident when she was 8. Did you ever have any of this connection with her?
I've never spoken about it with her, actually. She's 20 now. She's just turned 20. So I've never spoken about it with her, but interestingly, the last time I visited, she did say to me, "Hey, Auntie Lauren, do you still what did she say? Like, do you still do your baby soul readings and like talk to babies and stuff?" And I'm like, "Yeah, Liv." And then she was telling me about how she has like crystals under her pillow and different things like that. And so it's interesting. I think, there will come a day where I will share it. It's just something that I'm conscious too of, other people's beliefs. And a lot of people are not necessarily open to this sort of stuff. And so I'm sort of cautious, and
I
it's my
think
own stuff.
perhaps it's
I don't want
changing.
anything to,
You know, I do think it's
people
changing
are
now. And,
becoming.
you know, so certainly our age group, you know, there's a lot of encouragement for sort of like holistic treatments and, you know, finding something that works for you. You know, it might not be for everybody, Lauren, but finding something that works for you, being open-minded. And therefore this is passed down to then our younger generations who, you know, she's 20, she has crystals under her pillow. You know, back in when I was 20, I don't even think we even knew about crystals. You know, so it's that kind of that idea, certainly in our Western, well, my culture, you know. And perhaps with travel, the internet, social media, there's more and more influences and more ideas. And I think it's amazing personally. I love the creativity and the energy around these type of things. And it's always about if something can help you and if it can help you become unstuck in a particular area or give you comfort or whatever it is, do it. You know, just do that thing or several things. So what's next
Absolutely.
for you, Lauren? What's on the agenda?
I think it's going to be just expanding my work, and I love doing these podcast interviews and sharing the work that I do, and
It's how we get
working
you out
on
there, though, isn't it? You know, as I said, never heard of a baby soul communicator, and I'm sure most of the listeners won't have heard of one. But we've educated today,
Yes,
and you
that's
have in
right.
doing what you do. And as I said, I'm sure that too many parents, fathers and mothers, and even grandparents and family members, I'm sure you give a lot of comfort, relief, you know, and some understanding of perhaps where their children are at. Particularly, you know, again, it's every situation is different. Perhaps there's a really troubled child and the parents can't quite communicate with that child and maybe can come to you to see if there's anything you can help with. You know, I'd imagine that it's also very effective in situations like that.
Absolutely, especially with, children that are with autism, ADHD, especially children that might have some sort of communication issues.
Going to say that actually. Do you work
kids.
a lot with neurodivergent children as well?
Absolutely. And there's more and more mothers of these children, I guess, when you're not able to find the answers you're looking for in perhaps more of the mainstream, whether it's in the medical system or even different alternative therapies, they're sort of looking for these answers. And this, again, this information can help to support, the other answers out there and give that comfort, that insight, some direction. Often very specific information will come through from this child's soul about what they need. That's the beautiful thing about this work is that, these children are saying, we need this, we need that. And then parents can go away and they can do that. And there's been some profound results around that with different changes in their behavior and nervous system and their degree of, activation as far as their, sensitivity to their surroundings and that. So, So, and I think that's probably where, this work is going to start going more in that direction as working with, as there's more awareness around neurodivergence and, what
that's
that
right.
looks like and how we can best support those.
I can imagine you would make a real impact there, as an alternative therapy. Want to try kind of calming and soothing and that connection. And understanding with those particular children and help for the parents, that support for the parents. Because it can be really, really difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. And they just want to support their kids, right? So
yeah, exactly. We've all got best intentions.
Yes.
Absolutely. You just want to see them okay. So wonderful.
Yeah.
So just lastly, Lauren, do you know others that do your line of work? Are you in a community with others who do your line of work?
No, I don't know other people who do this sort of work. I guess it is very unique in that way. I mean, I've heard of a couple of different people overseas who in America who one is a spirit baby medium, but as far as I know, she doesn't work with babies necessarily once they're born. It's more that conception stage. So yeah, it is quite unique, which is amazing, but also can be really challenging at times as well.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of
But perhaps,
education.
I'm sure that, I spoke to a guest the other day. She's going to be coming on the podcast and she is a psychic and, she talks about connecting with the spiritual world. I guess for you, yours is more niche in the sense that it's just with children. I think a lot of the work that the people do in that area is more with adults. So, but perhaps with, there will be more and more people who will, begin to work with children. And as you said, there's some maybe ethics to consider in the sense of working with children and saying that you're, you can do this and you can connect and you're spiritual. I'd say there's a barrier there for you to keep pushing against.
Yeah, and I always ask for consent too.
Of
like
course,
whenever
yeah.
I'm communicating with well whenever I tune into a mother's energy field to that's where I normally find her children's souls, not always but most of the time. And so there's always a consent process first. It's harder when I was in the hospital and these babies would come straight to me, then I was kind of, it's almost like I feel like, well, they're coming to me. I'm not going looking for them. I'm not tapping into them out of curiosity. It's like they've somehow connect with me and see me, and it's like a moth to a flame. And so I would just roll with it. But yeah, look, it is a fine line to walk. It's very much a process of, having those strong ethics and strong boundaries as well, both with other humans here, but also with the spirit realm as well. Like that's something I take really seriously. And I'm only on at certain times. I do have sometimes babies come to me when I'm out walking around the lake or at a cafe with a friend. But I'm like, no, if you want to
reject.
communicate, yeah, like fine, get send your mothers my way and we'll talk. But so, and that's more for my own, like I just can't be on all the time because I'm a human
No,
too, right?
yeah,
I've got,
exactly.
I've still got my life to run and normal human things to do. So it's, that's one thing I've had to really work on, is just be very clear. It's like, okay, well, you know, I'll tune in, you know, at this time, or for me, it's usually in the morning because I do a lot of remote work as well. So it's not like it has to be on Zoom or in person. So I do a lot of remote work, and then I sort of get this feeling like, okay, I'm feeling like it's time to communicate and sit down, and sort of go into a meditation. I have a process I go through to get into a state where I can receive.
Yeah.
And so I will usually feel the babies or the souls coming to me, and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna have to make some time today to receive this information. But it's still about making sure that it's when it works for me as well, so I'm not just being bombarded all the time.
It's quite a process, isn't there? You know, and it's quite intense as well.
Yeah, oh
Yeah,
definitely. It's
very
very,
intense. Yeah.
it is holding those energies. You know, babies are, have a very high frequency, you know, they're not weighed down with a lot of the stuff that we as adults are. And so, you know, it's like they have to come down to me and I have to lift myself up to them. And that takes a lot of energy
Energy.
mentally, emotionally, physically as well. So it's, yeah, it is a
It's
process.
fascinating. It is truly fascinating. Now, if a mother or a father is listening to this today, what's one thing that you would say to them if you've sparked their intrigue, you know, if they are perhaps going through something at the moment, you know, what's one thing that you could give them as a takeaway?
Probably the most common piece of information that comes through, and I think probably is helpful for all clients on some level, is that it's not your fault. And it actually has, and again, this is where I can feel it coming through, it's like where the harsher wisdom comes through. But you know, we think it's our fault, but it's actually so much less about us than what we think it is. And that can be hard to, for that to land. You know, but we do tend to take on more responsibility for things than what we need to. Whereas I see very much see these babies coming, it's like we can only meet them halfway. We can't go running out to the spirit realm and like drag them back to earth. We can only do as much as we can here on earth, and then they have to meet us halfway. But we need to allow them to do that. We need to allow them to come to us and not go out trying to grasp them and grab them and pull them to earth. So, yeah.
There's kind of an element of respect there, isn't there? You know, we respect
Yeah.
where you are, respect where we are. We can communicate, but that's where it stops. Yeah. Well,
Absolutely.
Lauren, as I said many times, really, really fascinating work that you do. I'll make sure that all your information is in the show notes. You do work remotely. People can get in touch with you, so it will be there. And I'd just like to thank you so much for coming on Bouncing Back Stronger today.
Thank you so much for having me, Sarah. It's been great. Great to chat.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining me on this episode of Bouncing Back Stronger. I hope you've taken lots from this today, either for you or for somebody else. If you'd like to come on the show, you have a personal story, or perhaps you're an expert in a particular field, then please get in touch. You may even wish to work with me on all things linked to changing your beliefs and your behaviours. You'll find all my links in the show notes. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.